And welcome to the Glacially Musical Podcast, a Ghost Cult joint. Of course, I am Nick Cameron of Glacially Musical, joined by my good friend, a man you cannot refuse. You can't always hear him. Sometimes he's a little quiet. Keefe Corleone. How are we doing today, buddy?
Hey, what's up?
You know, I have, truth time, I have never finished The Godfather.
You said that last week, actually, too.
Did I? Okay.
You should really watch one and two.
I did find out. I did finish three, but that was in the 90s and universally panned, so I think no one cares. Anywho, you are not here for our gangster talk, even though Nick is waist deep in his Sopranos era. Thank you, Talking Sopranos. Thank you, Keefe, for mentioning the Talking Sopranos podcast to me. Anywho, how we do this is we have a greeting, a beer check, a vinyl check, a news check, a shirt check, and the meat of the day. This week we are discussing the brand new records from Ace Frehley and Bruce Kulick. Bruce Dickinson.
What?
The Bruce Dickinson. I'm
Bruce.
sorry, I
Oh,
got a
man.
record in the mail yesterday and it started a lot of conversation. And that conversation ended up with us talking about blackjack at work. Blackjack, the attempted hard rock, but actually yacht rock vehicle of Michael Bolton and Bruce Kulick. So I got Bruce Kulick on the brain and his fabulous mustache, and it was fabulous back in 1979. Anyway, let me go ahead and get to my beer check. I have my Samuel Smith pint glass, which is an actual pint, not one of those American ripoff pints. I was actually, when I did the beer and lobster festival a couple of weeks ago, they're like, "Do you want the 12-ounce glass or the 16-ounce glass?" I'm like, 16, and I'm pretty sure they handed me like a 10-ounce cup and charged me for 16 ounces. My beer of the week is a joint beer between two breweries. Obviously, it needs to be at least two. That would be Surly Brewing from Minneapolis, Minnesota, and local brew house, Four Hands Brewing, which I have discussed many times. What am I drinking, Keefe?
I don't know.
Voltron.
Other one, which
Volume
line?
Four.
Is that the
Red
Red
Lion.
Lion?
Red Lion. And we got Voltron kicking it on the other side. Finger fudge pour, of course.
All right, very cool. We're gonna go just Spartan this week. Waterloo watermelon seltzer, so we could cheers immediately. No glass, just raw dog in it. Cheers.
Cheers, my friend. Good to see you.
Speaking of seeing me,
Delicious.
I just made myself a little brighter looking, so hopefully I look better than I
Very
did a minute
sexy.
ago.
Very sexy. I mean, I want to do you now. Anywho, as we move on, rather than hearing awkward talk about two dudes that had all the time in the world that did not take it, I'm gonna have to trauma dump. Gonna have to trauma dump my records this week because I have run out of room to put the new records that I haven't checked in spots. I'm out of room because there's a certain spot and that got full. So I'm gonna do another spot and that got full. And I've gone into a third spot and that got full. And I had records on the floor. So here is this Nick's trauma dump. I'm gonna go quick on these unless they're cool. Up first, Bruce Dickinson, The Mandrake Project. It's 60 minutes, two discs. What do I think about it? Find out soon. Stick around. Number two, Ace Frehley, 10,000 Volts. What does Nick think about this record? Stick around, find out. Cool red cherry, as it were, record. Now, moving on. Here is something I have been looking for a long time, and I'm going to tell you, Boots Riley is not spectacular when it comes to the social media and letting me know that this shiz has happened. But here is my copy of The Coup, Genocide and Juice. I had never heard this record. I still want a copy of Pick a Bigger Weapon, which I think is my favorite Coup record. But this one is a US pressing from 2023, found it on Discogs for 20 fudgin' dollars. And yeah, I smashed that buy button. And this is a cool orange creamsicle, which makes no sense at all. Moving on. Next is a repurchase. My copy of this record was not in spectacular shape, and I have some skips on it. I only got it for 50, I got it for the original for $15 at an antique mall, and it was frankly a little skippy. And there's one more record by this band that I need to purchase another one by. And this record is, of course, Led Zeppelin, Physical Graffiti, the creative peak of the band. This is an original OG-ish pressing.
I have been to that building in New York City where that photo was taken.
So has our guest. Next up, because I did not want to stream during our last series, I purchased Slayer, Rain and Blood. Because apparently I now have that kind of money. Repressed, nothing interesting. Moving on. I may have checked this, I may not have, but either way, it's not put away, so I'm checking it today. Look at me rhyming. You can just call me Rhyming Simon. Previous podcast guest. Let me just pull it out of the jacket.
Just watch the glare on the ring light on the plastics.
I'm doing my best. Clouds Taste Satanic, 79 AE. And this, as Cloud Say Satanic always does, the vinyl itself is awesome. Look at that. It is a cool pumpkin splatter.
The brand new one.
Yep, that's all Halloween and shit. Moving on. Two more. I apparently have a record-shaped hole in my soul that I have got to fill with all of the great records that I listened to in the 90s on CD. So... finally got this one. Onyx, Back to Fuck Up. Original pressing. Sorry for the ASMR business. It is a little warped, but if you look at those grooves, if you can see them, it is spectacular. All right, kids, I'm going to check four more records and I'm going to call it a day. It's heavy. Booyah! This is the expanded double quadruple disc edition of Led Zeppelin. The Song Remains the Same. The Song Remains the Same is probably the first CD by Led Zeppelin I ever got, because like most people of a certain age, you know, us Gen Xers, we started on vinyl, we switched to cassettes, we switched to CDs, and then we moved back, and now we're back to vinyl. So the first... I had three or four albums on cassette tape, and when I moved to CD, The Song Remains the Same, I believe, was the first CD I ever got. And that, even when I was 19 and didn't know shit, I knew there was something wrong with that record. It didn't sound right. It didn't feel right. So now to have the entire concert, it makes it so much better. Anyway, yield my time.
Oh, I thought you said four more. You meant it's a four.
It was four, it was four more records.
Okay, fair enough. Moving right along, I think we should eschew the news check today, based on the length of everything. There's not much going on in the world other than Skid Row can't keep a vocalist, but whatever.
If it ain't Sebastian Bach, who cares?
I mean, that's not fair. Their last record was great with Eric Grunwald. He's now left the band, and
I'm just being silly.
They're going to play a series of shows with Lizzie Hale as the vocalist, which I'm actually want to go see.
I would love to see that.
I have a 1.5-4 check today. So first things first, I've got a 7-inch. I know you don't get any, but you got to admire the beauty of this packaging with the punch-out hole on the front and the back in the cover. This is a 7-inch by Chemist, Where the Wind Blows single. They announced a new record recently, I think. So again, look at this beautiful packaging. There's like a Satan in the woods contemplating this other scene here on the front. And I believe this is a colored jammy. This is like ox blood red or something. Already in the Mylar. Thank you, Nuclear Blast. I bought this as part of a bigger purchase from Nuclear Blast, but particularly this was free because I used my nuke points. When you buy a lot of stuff from Nuclear Blast, you get points. So again, I'm happy to humbly receive records for free, but also when I buy things and I use rewards, I will also let people know. I believe this was like $15 if you paid for it. Also in my
that is why I don't buy 7-inch, because they have to cost that much. I get it. It's real. But I just don't think there's enough value. I'll wait.
Coincidentally, cool. My other check today is Prong. Everybody knows I saw Prong just a couple of weeks ago here in the Bay Area with Voivod. They're co-headlining right now, Prong and Voivod, with Hyrax opening. And this is their latest record, State of Emergency, from last year that came out right before they opened for Metallica in New Jersey, playing in the parking lot. The cool thing about this is it's almost out of print. They're hard to find now. These are going and getting flipped on Discogs and eBay for a lot of money, and
motherfuckers,
it's possible they're not going to repress anymore. It's not, the band complained about this, and the merch guy complained about this. I'm like, where, Voivod has like 10 vinyls, where's the Prong vinyl? He's like, we don't have any, and we don't have the new one. So I'm glad that I got this one. I did, it's just the plain black, but I wanted to show you the gatefold. It's only one vinyl, so we know, a little wasteful, but the beautiful artwork.
Speaking of overpriced vinyl, did we discuss the Kiss vinyl box set for Creatures of the Night?
We didn't. I mean, you might have mentioned it, but
let me just run through it real quick.
I'm
if you're done,
in the middle of my check, so I'm not.
Sorry,
done.
Sorry.
I really don't like getting interrupted. You know, tisk tisk tisk, Nicholas. Again, the black vinyl with the nice label, A side, B side, and I wanted to show the insert that has all the lyrics, and it's on this very heavy. So instead of a Mylar, I'll need to put it in the Mylar. I literally just opened this to check it. But it's on this very thick stock. I don't know if you can appreciate the stock for State of Emergency and all the lyrics, which I think Prong lyrics are very underrated. And now I'm done if you want to talk about Kiss.
I apologize. I missed my beat. Sometimes I miss the beat. Before we get to that, the Prong and Voivod show, I believe, is coming to town, and I probably should go to that. But real quick, I'm going to drop a quick bit of Kiss news. There was some online discussion about a $900 item that was coming soon from Kiss Corp. And what it turned out being was they are releasing the Creatures of the Night box set, which they sold for $350 on CD, on vinyl for $900. I thought the $350 on CD was exorbitant, and I would say that $350 on vinyl is exorbitant as well. So good luck with that, Kiss. I'm glad you love us all, in a manner of speaking, anyway.
Yeah, it's kind of a light week of news, like I said. Not a lot going on in the world, and probably some big news around the corner when you have a quiet lull before the storm, you know?
I mean, just think, last time we had a quiet lull, then Slayer reunites.
That's entirely true. For those who missed our Slayer series just completed, there'll be a link in the description.
Definitely check that out. And I guess we are now going to move forward to... I can't hear you.
We've been missing the shirt check every week. So let's do the shirt check in the proper place. We skip the news check.
Proper shirt check. Metallica, Ride the Lightning.
I really like that blue Ride the Lightning shirt, friend. That's a shirt I used to see around junior high school in the 80s. I like
it. I would love to like tell you something really cool, like, you know, I got this when I was 15 or something. But nah, I got it at Macy's like 2 years ago.
Yeah, that's fine. I'm not mad.
Whatever. God is God. It looks cool.
My favorite, I'm wearing a Star Wars shirt. My favorite Star Wars shirt of all time is the Millennium Falcon schematic. I think it was from Target. And it was the only chubby size one they had. So I was very lucky to get that one.
I had a Voltron shirt from Target.
Not mad at it. You get a shirt where you get a shirt from. This is Star Wars. Not because of Danny. I just happen to be wearing this. Today's an undershirt. So here it is.
Fair enough. Alrighty. Are we...
We're ready to bring in the guest star for the Chaser. Hold on 1 second. I'll pause.
And we are joined by one of my absolute favorite human beings in this world. A man who will lie to you to your face, though. He will tell you he's a crappy guitar player. Do not listen to a word of it. I've seen the man play. I have played with him. It takes him a minute, but he gets there. He is amazing. He is the rhythm guitar player for Torchlight Parade. He is somebody in about 15 other bands. He is a genuine friend of mine who's always invited to come to my house like Saturday to watch the Battle Hawks. Proper football. Or next week when we're watching it outside with the bonfire. My good friend, my legitimate good friend, friend of the show, Danny Nichols. How are we doing today, Danny?
Excellent. Glad to be here. It's always an honor to be on this fine show. As you know, I listen to every single podcast you put out. So I'm well-versed in the thinkings of both you and Keefe. So,
well, I will not lie. I like to have you on here because you pump my tires like nobody does. I mean,
there you go.
My singular tire, which is not round, is now very long. So thank you for that.
Jesus Christ. Danny, great to see you again. Too bad it's not over a slinger back in St. Louis, but it's lovely to have you back, man. That was a lot of fun. Record shopping with two of my favorite people in the world. And I don't know how you have so much swag that you match your hat to a poster behind a flag on your wall behind you and the cool shirt. That's the trifecta.
Hammerfall is Danny's favorite band. They are number 7 on his list of 15. They're number 10 on his list of, 10 favorite bands, which actually is about 76.
Oh, no, they're number 1. They're my favorites, for sure.
So. I realized that, but I screwed it up and I couldn't pull it back.
That's a bold statement, Cotton. That's a there bold statement. Go. Number 1 with a bullet.
Never seen that movie.
I have to be... Yeah, that's a failure. I have to be in the mood for power metal. There's a lot of bands that grate on me. I cannot listen to, like, Sonata Arctica. Can't do them. But sometimes I feel, like, very... I want a sword, and I want to sing about war, and I want to swing an axe in a forest and shit, and then I want to hear it. But, like, the rest of the time, I'm like, I got to be in a mood. But Hammerfall's your favorite band, they're great, right? Inarguably a great band. I'm just not – it's just not my chosen genre.
One of my favorite things ever about power metal is – I'm going to tell a story about one of my close friends, Danny Nichols. He was in Sweden, and he texts me, Sabaton, at catching a metro train. He's like, look, they're everywhere.
Yeah, we landed in Sweden, and there's like a train that takes you from the airport into Stockholm proper. And on the platform, the first thing we saw when we got to Sweden was the guys from Sabaton getting on a train. And I couldn't believe it. And then for the rest of the time we were there, there was no indications of metal whatsoever. So it was like the first 30 seconds, and then that was it. But I did send Nick the picture of them with their Sabaton stamped gear bag. So I like Sabaton too. They're really cool. So
they were even dressed like Sabaton. They had their white business on.
They had like gear bags and everything, like in totes and everything. So they must have been coming back from a show somewhere. So they were in full regalia. So
fun live, and I think that this tour with Judas Priest is going to help them immeasurably. They might have opened for Maiden on a couple of shows in America too. So I'm not a big Spotify is the measuring stick of your band's success, but I would be interested to see Sabaton's numbers now and go look in 6 months and see where they are after the Priest tour.
If my kid were here, I'd have her pop up and give those to me, but she's not. So sorry.
There's a lot of people at the Judas when they opened for Judas Priest last year that were like, "Man, I'd never heard of this band," and they're really great, and they're winning fans over that night. So,
where did you see Sabaton with Judas Priest last year? Because I saw them last year with
the Music Park, the new place by the casino that's impossible to get in and out of.
I must have seen them 2 years ago because I saw them with.
I might be messed up too. It might have been 2 years ago. Maybe it was 2 years ago.
I saw them at the Family Arena with Queensryche. And
this was definitely at the Music Park because the traffic somebody else. Was a big story of the night. So, yeah, it was with Judas Priest out there. I think it was last summer, but maybe it was 2 summers ago.
I'm actually going to see a show at Music Park this year, my first one, Melissa Etheridge.
I went to see Ace Frehley there, who's the topic of the night, and Alice Cooper. And it was such a nightmare getting in there and getting through security that even though we got there like 2 hours before the show started, we missed the first half of Ace Frehley's set.
Well, I mean, surely it's better now, right?
I would hope so. This was like coming out of the pandemic, and they were still dealing with looking at vaccination cards and everything else. So, but it was just a complete nightmare. But that was a couple of years ago, so maybe they got it together by now. So,
I wonder if because we're staying that night, I wonder if I could just park in the casino and walk over.
That would probably be best because getting the traffic, I think that they've designed it so that it's so impossible to get out of there. You just go to the casino. It's such a bottleneck.
So you don't want to go see a Lindenwood game with me next year then?
Well, Lindenwood's probably quite less of a crowd.
Yeah. There's a few less people coming to see Lindenwood, get their asses whooped by Michigan than an Alice Cooper show. Probably.
I know they're like Division 1 now. So,
All right, we could yap all day and discuss this, and I would have a wonderful, wonderful time. But before we get into the meat of the day and make you work for your supper, what do you have going on with Torchlight Parade?
So the big thing is we got a show coming up on April 27th in Arnold, Missouri, and it's our annual fundraiser for St. Baldrick's, which is a charity that raises money for kids with cancer. We have a close friend of the band who lost his son to cancer, so it's a big deal for us every year to do this fundraiser. And it's going to be us and Jimmy Griffin. Jimmy Griffin was the guitar player for King of the Hill. I don't know if Keefe remembers King of the Hill, I'd be impressed. They were almost a big deal for a minute in the late 80s. They almost made it out of St. Louis. They had a couple songs on MTV.
Yeah, they're like
I definitely know who they are. Yeah.
So they're Jimmy Griffin's. Still is their guitar player. They do about one show a year locally still. So he's going to be on the bill with us, and he's also in El Monstero, which is a really well-renowned Pink Floyd tribute band, and Celebration Day, a Led Zeppelin tribute band. So I have no idea what sort of set he's going to do, but maybe there'll be some Pink Floyd and some Zeppelin. I don't know. And then we have Aragon, which is a kids band. They're recent graduates from School of Rock. So they're, high school kids that have, formed their first metal band. They have a hotshot young guitarist and everything. And so Jojo Mateo, she's more of a pop singer in from Arizona. So, but anyway, we got a hall rented out and we're trying to raise as much money as we can for St. Baldrick's. We do it every year in March. So that's our next big show. I said in March, but it'll actually be in April this year. April 27th.
Very cool. Very cool. Should mention the El Monstero Maryland Heights show just went on sale, or is going on sale. So I'm trying to decide if I'm going to do that. But anyway, I guess we can now get into the newest album by everyone's favorite lead guitarist, somebody here we all have loved since the 80s. And that, of course, is Steve Brown of Trickster.
Well played.
His Ace Frehley record. So to get the elephant out of the room before we move on into the track by track, because we got to be a little bit quicker because we're already halfway through the show. Steve Brown and Ace Frehley have been having a war of words, a different recollection of how this happened. Steve Brown believes that 95% of the record is him. Ace Frehley says, we're not going to count how much of it is each person. We each get 50-50 because we all get credit, which makes me think that it actually is 95% for Steve Brown. So there's been a lot going on. And then Steve Brown even played some of the solos. Ace has admitted to 80% of the guitar solos being Steve Brown. And I'm not going to be, when we go through the track by track, I'm not going to be able to give you, oh, this one was Steve, oh, that one was Steve. But I'll tell you, man, the lead guitar work on this record is really tight. It's not sloppy. Wow, who does that not sound like? Anybody? Does that sound like Ace? That doesn't sound like Ace to Nick.
Yeah, I think Ace at this stage, as much of a super fan of his as I was, I feel like he's greatly diminished in many capacities.
Oh, he is Bernie. Ace Frehley has become Bernie. Just, you put him on the dolly, you wheel him on stage, you put a guitar in his hands, and then you just pretend like things are great.
You mean like Weekend at Bernie's or Bernie Sanders?
Oh my God. No, Bernie Federka. Obviously Weekend at Bernie's.
Don't know. Although, I mean, somebody listening, you got to really dumb it down because
I apologize.
We don't really know what our audience is.
I apologize because
Danny, who's part of the show right now.
Yeah, and so our listenership's going to go way down this week because Danny's not going to listen.
We're going to crater.
But I guess I should point out that, yes, I'm now referencing a 40-year-old fucking movie. I have just gotten so old that the things that happened when I was 10, I assume everybody still knows. But no, real quick trivia question, and for Danny, what is Bernie Federko? Who's Bernie Federko married to?
Oh, geez, I don't know.
Bernie Federko.
Ah.
His wife's name is Bernie Federko.
I don't get the joke if that is a joke, but
it's not a joke.
The deep cut.
Bernard and Bernadette.
Yeah, you're
Really?
wild. It's a wild question to pull out of your butthole. I'm gonna remark on Ace and say, like, I think Ace is confusing songwriting credits and publishing. And I think they gave Steve Brown the publishing on half the record to compensate him for underpaying him for participating in the record, right?
That sounds right.
And Ace is conflating or confusing these two things that are distinctly legally different. And Ace said he took like a shot at several shots. I'm very shocked at this revelation that Steve went on. He doesn't give a lot of interviews. Ace, he's not wrong. He doesn't give a lot of interviews, and he probably wasn't expecting that question, so he was not prepared. So he answered probably truthfully, and it took Ace by surprise because that's not his brain.
Right. Truthfully is not Ace's lane.
Well, we know that also.
I mean, I'm going to quote my good friend Chris, who performed my wedding, and he said, you know, I love Kiss. They're a great band, but when you talk about them, we're talking about four legitimately terrible people. And he's not wrong. He's not wrong. And when you mentioned Ace conflating publishing with songwriting and royalties, I think you're absolutely correct. He still says to this day he has leased his trademark to Kiss Corp. Which he has not. Maybe they send him money to keep him quiet so he doesn't like cause any problems, but no, he sold it. He knows he sold it, or he doesn't know.
Are you guys familiar with the band Classic 78? Classic spelled with a K?
I am aware of their existence. I choose not to listen because it just seems so stupid.
Well, so what they are is they're basically a band that writes songs in the style of classic Kiss.
Yeah, that's exactly why I don't listen.
It's a strange thing. It's kind of a novelty thing, but they do a really, really good job of it. They sound like lost Kiss songs from the 70s. They're almost better than most of the stuff that Kiss has put out since the 70s.
Low bar.
But I feel like that Steve Brown has kind of done that. Like, if this isn't Ace playing or doing these songs, and I agree with you guys that it probably isn't, he has written songs that sound like they were Ace songs.
We have learned is that Steve Brown should have been Tommy Thayer.
Maybe. Steve Brown is probably not as good a soloist as Tommy Thayer, but I will. I mean, Danny, this is a point I had made in my notes exactly to talk about this. Because I do feel like the album is trying to be an Ace, like, do you remember? Do you like Trouble Walking? Do you like Fractured Mirrors? Here's that. Here's something like it for you dumb fans.
It is 100% that. And Steve Brown is amazing at it. And it doesn't matter if he's not as good a soloist as Tommy Thayer. Ace Frehley only knows all of the techniques I know on guitar. I mean, that is legitimately true. If you take lessons for 2 years, you are a better technical player than Ace Frehley ever could be. Because Ace Frehley never took a lesson and never learned. And so now we have a guy that goes, and that's like, whoa, look at me, I nailed it. No, you did not. Everybody else has passed you by and they're looking at you like you're an idiot. So I think we have beaten the horse.
I guess. I mean, I think it's unfair. Like, all right, we don't have to assassinate the guy. We know why Ace is loved. His stuff is very memorable. Like I said, the trivia question, I don't think I brought it up the last time, but like little known fact, Mike McReady of Pearl Jam went into the studio to record all of Pearl Jam 10's lead guitars and drew a blank. Had nothing prepared, knew the songs, co-wrote some of those songs, all the iconic ones, Alive, Jeremy, Even Flow, no planned. You know what he did? He copied all the Ace guitar solos from Alive 1 and 2. Literally.
I forget what song it was, but he did the solo for She.
Black. It's literally the solo of Black.
And do you know what the solo from She is?
Stolen from something else, probably.
It is note for note, the solo to 5-1 by the Doors.
That's fine. But I'm just saying, like,
I love that because it's. It's just like living through time.
Ace's stuff is memorable. I know he was dressed up as the spaceman and his guitar smoked and fired rockets and kiss, because I was at Kiss fan too. But like, he has iconic, memorable solos that legions of guitar people would have never picked up a guitar if not. And It's possible that people heard Kiss on the radio or heard of Kiss before they saw Kiss. I know that flipped around in later times, but I don't want to totally, like, say Ace has no merits as a guitarist. I just think, like, he's not learning to be a better guitar player at 71 years old when he doesn't care.
He didn't learn to be a better guitar player at 26. I will say this. Ace Frehley has an amazing gift that very few players in this world ever have. And that's a player of any instrument. He has an ear for melody. He did not have. His toolbox consisted of one 14 millimeter socket wrench, one flathead.
Is this a penis insult? Oh, my God.
No. I mean, Ace's penis is, I mean, it's the envy of the Western world and some of the Eastern Bloc, but that's besides the point. I mean, we've all seen that photo from Dynasty. Anyway, his toolbox was, you know, a 14 millimeter box wrench. It is a flathead screwdriver and a nail to hit posts into the garden. But he was able to take those tiny little tools and make an amazing career that inspired millions and inspired people to follow his path and to follow his dream. Scott Ian, Dimebag Darrell, his inspirational qualities cannot be understated. He's people say he's influential, but he's not. He's inspirational. There's a difference. Influential means people took his techniques, but he had no techniques. Sorry, truth. But he had an amazing ear, and he made playing guitar solos cool again. And that's a big deal. So, and he is still my favorite guitar player. I still play a black Les Paul because of Ace Frehley.
You mean guitar solos weren't cool in the 1970s with David Gilmour and Jimmy Page and Jeff Beck and everybody else? You mean they weren't cool?
Not in the way that Ace Frehley did it.
Okay.
Well, Eddie Kramer has said before.
Oh, and Eddie Van Halen, by the way.
Yeah.
That was 1978.
That Ace was, you know, the biggest talent in Kiss, that he thought Ace Frehley actually had quite a bit of talent. So there was something there. I mean, Ace at 71, though, is like, if you want to stay like an Ace, don't listen to any of his recent interviews. Like, you know, and don't.
And by recent, I would say the last 20 years.
That could be, but it's especially been amplified in the last 5 years or so, that it's almost painful to listen to him talk now. But you know, the Spaceman, that 1978 guy shooting rockets out of his guitar, I'm still in love with the character, and I'm still in love with those classic solos. So, and that's what keeps me coming back, and I just kind of turn a blind eye to
everything else.
What he's become.
That's what I do. I mean, anyway. Yes, I think we're all in the same spot when it comes to how much we love Ace. We love what Ace was. We love what Ace brought us. And I don't think any of us are listening to Kiss or Ace Frehley songs for the meaning of life. This is not Pink Floyd we're talking about. We're talking about guys that literally write songs who don't know shit from Shinola. And with that.
Go ahead. I will say that I felt like the bar is very low with lyrics on Ace Frehley albums, but the lyrics were actually a little bit better this time. Not that they were.
Oh my
great.
God, Danny is high. Well, let us, if you don't, we'll get to that. Let's go to the track by track. We got to blow through this because we got another record after this.
Right on.
So let's start off with 10,000 Volts. You know what? It is a great, wonderful little ditty. We got Anton Figg on the drums. Steve Brown is credited on guitar on this one. Bass guitar is PJ Farley. So it's a rotating cast of characters, but it's like the same six dudes. You know what? This one is fun. Ace, not that he ever had much to say, has completely run out of things to say. His lyrics have now become like his guitar solos. Very, very limited. Excuse me, limited scope.
I thought, I actually think that 10,000 Volts is a really great song. Probably my favorite song out of any of the songs on the three albums. And to skip ahead, I love that the Bruce Dickinson one. But I think this 10,000 Volts album could have been on the 78 solo album and would be considered a classic to this day. I think it's head and shoulders above everything else on this album. I think it's really catchy, and I've gone back to it to listen to it 5 times already. So I really truly love this. This is the best of what it could be, but it is the best of the album, I think. So I think there's 3 songs in this album that are really good. But
I'll give you, this is very, very likely probably the best song on this record.
Yeah, no notes, Danny. Great analysis. This is definitely the best song on here. Here's some advice for bands. If you're not Ace Frehley, you can't do this. What probably happened here is that first track they wrote is 10,000 Volts. It came with everything they had, whether it's Steve, Ace, mostly Steve, a little bit of Ace, whatever. Sounds like an Ace song. Sounds like it's supposed to sound. I will say that my favorite thing about this whole record, aside from this song, is Ace's voice sounds really well recorded and great here. He's double tracked. He's got a nice little bassy character. He's not trying to do anything dramatic with his vocal range, which is appreciated because he shouldn't. And I think they were satisfied when they heard this song. Like, this is awesome. And the whole record's going to be this good. And no, it isn't. But this is a great opening track, and this should never come out of the set list, whatever Ace does the rest of his life.
I mean, I'd say this is maybe my top three favorite Ace solo album songs of all time. I just really loved this song.
But I just about had Voltron IPA down my esophagus. Thank you very much, Keefe. Jesus Christ, everybody cracking me up. Moving on to Walking on the Moon. I remember watching the video for this one and not being able to get through it. If you don't have to look at Ace in a jumbo blow up astronaut suit with sexy aliens, it's much easier to get through. It's a good song. It's not as good as the predecessor, and we're quickly going to get into diminishing returns on this record, but thankfully the diminishment is very minor track by track, at least for a while.
I thought this song was a pretty good song too. It's a drop off from the one before it, but I think it's a solid song. Again, it's like they keep going back to the well of the space theme and the electricity theme and stuff. But in a way, that's kind of what we want, I think. So it's just like it's fan service really at this point, but it's not a terrible song. I thought it was pretty good. I liked it.
Yep. Decent song. And somehow I let the video miss me. So no worries there.
That's the smart play. Moving on into Cosmic Heart, I have no recollection of this song whatsoever. So somebody else fill my void.
I thought it has a really catchy chorus, which isn't always Ace's strong suit. So I did think it had a really catchy chorus and some good guitar work. But at this point, like, we don't know how much of this is Ace and how much of it is Steve Brown miming Ace. But another good song, you know. It's kind of the theme for me is above average songs, but nothing great.
Above is being generous to me, but I would say here's Ace's 2 topical points, his poles, if you will. A lot of songs are about his pole and filling voids with his pole, and space, and you know, sci-fi things. That's his only lyrical content ever, because that's who he is. This is an okay song. I don't even think it's that great. It's okay.
You're absolutely right with Ace. He's going to sing about space, kind of, or he's going to use space as a metaphor for a hoo-ha, which is a very technical term for a ladies down there. I don't know if anybody knows that. Moving on to, speaking of down there and hoo-has, Cherry Medicine. Holy fucking Christ. This is bad. If you just change the lyrics to something where I'm not thinking about a 72-year-old man's dick in a 3-way, actually it was a 4-way, I'm going to really like this song a lot better. You are as old as my grandfather, and like not even like my earliest memories of my grandfather. I'm 48, though. I guess I'm going to say I hope I am that Randy when I'm in when I become a septuagenarian. So moving on.
So this one, I mean, is clearly an attempt at a hit single power pop song. It's kind of bubblegummy, doesn't necessarily have a lot of substance. And I didn't really like it the first time I heard it, but it's grown on me. And I spent, you know, sometimes you get a song stuck in your head and then it's stuck in your head until you hear another song or hear the song that's stuck in your head. Well, I went like a week straight without hearing any rock last week. So I had Cherry Medicine stuck in my head for a week straight. I don't, that doesn't necessarily mean it's a good song, but it is kind of catchy and I don't hate it. So I like it.
That sounds like my nightmare. I'm so sorry, dude. This is a song where the lyrics are so bad it ruins the whole song for me, which is a lot.
Thank you. That's exactly what I was trying
to
say.
I would like the song if it was about anything else but this song lyrics. And someone, a producer, a manager, John Astronomy, someone has to come in there, John Pastronomy, as I like to call him. You need to step in and be like, not that. Can you take another pass at this? Some quality control. That's what a good producer does. Hey, is that the lyrics you want to go with? Like, you think you could do better? Just make him think it's his idea. You know what I think would be better than this? Anything. So, and this is a lot of the rest of the record for me, but you go right ahead and like this a lot.
Yes, you are Keefe. Thank you. No notes. My notes are reach arounds in your future from me, from that. Thank you. Because you said this in a way that I never could. Moving on into Back Into My Arms Again. Here we have classic Ace Frehley writing love ballads. I'm going to correct you slightly, Keefe. He has three modes. He has his pole in a void, and the void, of course, is space that he uses as a metaphor. And then he has the monogamy songs, which I don't know that Ace is good at monogamy. So here we are, Back In My Arms Again. Okay, you know what? Your arms are creepy and gross, and I don't want to be there.
Yeah, this sounds like a classic Ace ballad. Maybe something that would have been on like Second Sighting, which wasn't that good of a record. I don't like when Ace does ballads, kind of for this reason that you're hinting at, that it just doesn't feel authentic and it just comes off as kind of creepy. I don't know if that's the right word for it.
No, it's completely the right word. Think about the ballad What Every Girl Wants. If that is not the creepiest, most misogynistic crap ever, I don't know what could be.
Yeah, I actually like that song. We've disagreed on that song before, but
you can be wrong.
When I say I like it, I'm not saying necessarily lyrically. But that song is kind of a rocker, but it's funny when he just goes for it full tilt boogie on a rocker and has obnoxious, stupid lyrics, it doesn't bother me. When he does it in a ballad, it just seems kind of ridiculous. So
that's because in the ballad, you hear what he's saying.
Maybe there's not enough guitar work to distract me.
That sounds plausible. I will jump in and say, yeah, lyrics not great, song okay, again. You know, Ace has moved back east, and he's in love. He's got a partner again that isn't crazier than usual. And so I think there's a lot of that I'm in love on this record. Like, you know, lovey-dovey, a lot of Beatles harmonies. Like, this song's about love. It should have, like, a Beatles three-part harmony by Ace, which isn't a good idea. But I like that he tried it. At least he tried. And I think there's a lot of whatever's going on in it. Whatever, we may be snarky. We snark a bit here on the Glacial Musical Podcast. But I'm rooting for him as a person. Like, I'm not trying to be shitty. If he's happy and in love and sober-ish, I don't think he's really sober, but if he's sober-ish, good for him. Really good for him. Because I don't want to, we're losing people, and I don't want to lose him soon either. But, like, I don't need this song. I don't.
I think Ace Frehley is sober-like. It's almost sober. Like the people who stop drinking and start doing edibles. I think that's kind of the realm we're living in here with Ace. But flipping the record, Fighting for Life. Ace has spoken very highly about this song. He thinks it's the best song on the record and Steve Brown, blah, blah, blah. You know, it doesn't really resonate with me at all. And at this point in time in the record, there is a lot of sameness going on, and I don't know what the lyrics are about in this one. I don't know if it's... And one of the complaints I heard a lot by people who hadn't heard the record was that it was way too auto-tuned. And around this time in the album, yes, there is a lot of auto-tune, and it's starting to get more and more noticeable. If you go back to Spaceman, his last album of original music, the vocals were just fuck terrible. They were just like one, it was like Krusty the Clown recording for his Dolly, where he just did it all in one take and he runs out the door and the engineer goes, all right, we're ready to, oh, where's Krusty? And yeah, he gave that, he, you know, that's how many fucks he gave on making sure that his record sounded good. Just, oh, they're gonna give me $85,000. Let's just go in, get it done, and run out the door. So Steve Brown has worked so hard to fix that. And I think the auto tune is something probably added later in order to polish the turd into something. So I yield my time.
You know, I will say that I don't think the vocals are particularly great on this album either, though. I mean, not that anybody's saying that, but a lot of the
I'm just
times
saying noticeably better.
maybe, but they sometimes it sounds the lyrics come off a little bit slurred, it seems like. But I think that's probably just a functioning of his age and everything.
I don't
But
think they have a slurry tune, just the auto tune.
yeah, a slurry tune. But that said, Fighting for Life is the other song besides 10,000 Volts that I really like a lot. I think it's a great rocker. I think if we had grown up with this one on the 78 album, it would be considered a classic. Because a lot of times the value of a song is as much when you hear it as the song itself. And so I think this, you know, or at the very least on Fraley's Comet, the first solo album, I think this is a really great song. I really like the riffs in it. So I'd say this and 10,000 Volts, I would pluck these two and keep them in the set list and on the greatest hits albums forever. So.
Yeah, it's an above average song for this record, and good guitar stuff, nice beat, good production. Again, good singing, Ace. Good singing for Ace. Let's say good singing for him. Strange that he should be the best vocalist of anybody that's ever been in Kiss at this age. Shockingly, you know, Paul with his well-known vocal issues, and Gene never great to begin with. So yeah, Fighting for Life, we'll keep it. We'll keep it. So keep it.
I'm just gonna say that Gene is still a way better vocalist than Ace is now. But moving on into Blinded, I'm gonna just point out that Danny has really made the point that Keith has really illustrated the point that Keithy made at the top of the show. They really worked hard to make an Ace Frehley record. This is the Ace Frehley. This is the Ace Frehley. And yes, there are songs on here like Fighting for Life, 10,000 Volts, that, you know, he writes this in his 20s or 30s or even 40s, and none of us are batting an eye at the lyrics, but it a little bit contrived now. Anyway, moving on into Blinded, if memory serves, and it may not, this is another one of those tracks about, you know, loving for life and doing it right, and he loves Rachel and blah, blah, blah. And you know what? A lot of people don't like Rachel, but I'll say this much. She has worked hard to make his social media presence exist. And it's not like he's getting a whole lot of press, so, you know, everybody needs to be thanking Rachel for this.
I think, isn't his wife's name Laura? I think.
Oh, it is Lara. Who the hell's Rachel?
Rachel's the ex that was crazy, and it's
Oh, fuck
why he
me.
left California. So, Nick, you got your facts wrong.
I'm going to quote
So also
Kellyanne
a so
Conway,
also a
alternative facts.
so also a
Alternative
it's also a day that ends in Y. So Nick has his facts wrong, you know,
facts.
sometimes.
Oh.
Frequently. Danny, did you have some brief thoughts on Blinded as we try to plow through
Yeah,
this?
just to really quickly, I would say that this is kind of with the point where the songs are counting to sound similar and paint by number Ace Frehley. That's kind of the theme for the rest of the album from here on out. So we've already hit my three favorites, and it's kind of a
Let's
downward
just
spiral from here.
crash through the next few.
Song is okay, rinse, repeat, go on.
Right.
Right.
Constantly cute, kind of terrible. Don't need it. Moving on.
Absolutely terrible. I think if you're ranking a song on a scale of 1 to 10 and you use cute in the title, it automatically gets a -5 right out of the gate. This is the song,
Can't
like when
disagree.
the lyrics are so cringy that I just, this is probably my least favorite Ace Frehley song of all time. Is I
Agree. Hard
wish I
agree.
could unhear this
I
one.
also wish I had never heard this song. This sucks so bad. It hurts me physically.
Yeah, he I got some text from Keefe about that today, specifically this song. Moving on into Life of a Stranger, completely unmemorable. Done.
Yeah, the same. Again, this is more of Blinded and the next one and the next one. So they're good songs. I don't hate them. I think they're good, but they're just middle of the road, you know. So
it's too much. It's too much of the same.
And maybe that's, I think it's hard to hold somebody's attention for 12 songs or whatever it is on this album.
It's 36 minutes. It's the right number for Ace Frehley. Ace Frehley is a 35 minute album guy. The problem is, and you know what, I'm just going to yield all my time and not do any more tracks after what I say right now. I like this album. It's better than his last two. I'm not counting the Origins records, cause that's a weird thing, but it's not great. You know, this is a 7.5 out of 10, which is a huge step up from the 2.5 out of 10 that Spaceman was. And I thank Steve Brown for that. Thank you, Steve Brown.
Yeah, I feel like I'd give it about a 7.5 out of 10 too. 10,000 volts, Fighting for Life, awesome. I shouldn't like it, but I like Cherry Medicine. You know, and I kind of like Cosmic Heart too. So it's like, honestly, if you take the first half of this, make it an EP, it's great, but too much filler beyond that.
Painful. Painful is a word I would use to describe most of this. This is not a competent record except for a couple of songs. So maybe a generous grade to me as a very hard grader would be a 6. Would be generous. I think Stratosphere is actually a nice closer to the album as the instrumental. Doesn't sound quite like Ace wrote it. And there is a very cool Ace played callback to Kiss Alive 2, if you catch it. Go back and listen to it. There's like a 2-second, he did a thing that's on another Kiss thing. Oh, that thing, he did the thing. Oh, he said the thing. Hello there. He did the thing, you know? I have a bad feeling about this. He did one of those musically. So just to keep it Star Wars with Danny. And yeah, this is... I don't need this. I will tell you what's really weird is this quality of record made me appreciate the covers records that are also no good. Mostly incompetently bad covers records. And now yes. I understand why the covers records are really loved and sucked up by the fans and bought, because that's the best he can do. And this is not the best he can do. And you know what? I believe he could have done better with a better producer.
I disagree. This is the best he can do now. This is way better than his last original record. And it's on par with Space Invader. Space Invader's problem was it was way too long.
I thought you liked us. Why are we doing this record then? I thought you liked me.
I like this record. Look, I mean, Ace Frehley and Kiss, they are what they are. They're a 30-30-30 group. And that 30 you get that's killer is going to be so great. And then you're going to get Constantly Cute in there too.
Yeah,
or Bird Bitch Burn.
Definitely a 30-30-30 record. Yeah, three great songs, three middle songs, and three bad songs.
There you go. Let us now move on to something very literate. We're a very literate band. We read books and stuff, and we watch movies from the 50s and TV shows from the 60s, and we do songs about fugitives with one arm and prisoners. So we are now talking about, of course, the greatest man in the history of the planet. Somebody you do not question. Keefe, who don't you question? Question Bruce Dickinson.
Don't question Bruce Dickinson. I got a fever for more cowbell.
They still do that in Rockford. I don't know if I mentioned that since I've been there, but they still do that. 30 years later, they're still playing that sample, and I love it because I remember it. We are now talking about Bruce Dickinson, the Mandrake Project. I'm going to go on record now, right now, because I don't know if I have. I am not a big fan of the Bruce Dickinson solo records. Everything up until the previous one to this, to me, has been abject crap. So when I say not a big fan, I mean detest them. So we are now getting on to the next record with Roy Z, which I think is the worst stage name I have ever heard. Twiggy Ramirez is a better stage name than that. Oh, God, is that where I went? Oh, Jesus Christ, I'm sorry. Rob Zombie's a better... that's not even better. Moving on to non-problematic people.
Your point is taken. Continue.
Bruce Dickinson. Okay, let's just break through this. Bruce Dickinson has not had a solo record in 16 years. His last was 2008. Which was during a break of in Iron Maiden. And again, we have Bruce Dickinson doing a solo record in a break from Iron Maiden. I believe, and I could be wrong with it, Steve Harris is doing the British Lion project again before they start ramping up the Iron Maiden Machine towards the end of the year, and there is a small tour in South America for Bruce on his solo project. Moving on to the record itself, we will now hit into the track by track. Afterglow of Ragnarok. This is precisely what Iron Maiden sound like would sound like if Steve Harris was not in the band. Pretty damn good.
So I think it's important for me to state how much I disagree with Nick's assessment of solo Bruce Dickinson. I think there's two different eras of it. There's like the Tattooed Millionaire and Balls to Picasso. And what's the other one that were more of poppy, less metal, that weren't that very, very good.
Accident of Birth.
I love Accident of Birth. I adore that album. It's one of my favorite albums of all time. Maybe top 10 favorite albums of all time. And
we're 37 in Danny's top 10.
Yeah. Well, I say that about a lot, but I cannot overstate how much I love Accident of Birth, Tyranny of Souls, Chemical Wedding, and now this one. I think that there are four masterpieces, and I think Roy Z is a genius. So this one hasn't had time to grow on me. I'm on my third listen to it. I started my third listen to it today, so it hasn't had time to grow on me as much as the three previous. But I have worn those out because I just love them. It's just they're heavy. They rumble.
Wait, there's a third Roy Z record?
So it's Chemical Wedding, Tyranny of Souls, and Accident of Birth.
I did not know he was on Chemical Wedding. Okay, somebody I know that's named me is going to be checking that record out.
Okay, well, you can fact check me on that. I may have misspoke. Maybe he wasn't on that record, but I thought he was. But maybe he's not. But those albums, and I think what I love about his style is he is very very generous with like the gallopy palm muted riffs, which is everything that I love in this world. And I think it's what leads me to Hammerfall, Halloween, you know, Camelot, all that stuff. And that there with this rumble behind it, it's just glorious. I love it. So comparing this to the Ace album, this is so much of a step forward. You can't really compare the two. It's too
yes difficult. Roy Z is on Chemical Wedding, so I'm gonna be buying that one.
Okay, yeah, I thought he was, but anyway, the Roy Z Bruce Dickinson stuff, I adore it, and this one is well on its path to equaling those first three for me. So
fair enough. First of all, I'm going to lodge a formal complaint, the first ever in the Glacially podcast history. I listened to the Mick Mars album three fucking times, and it's terrible. It's really unconscionably bad. It's got two good songs. Two. 280. Not 30, 30, 30. 2080. It's bad.
So it's fair warning.
It's not even fair warning. Come get out of here. It doesn't have Eddie, and it doesn't have Dave. Get out of here. I love Bruce Dickinson's solo work, and how I think of this record is the last couple of records that had contributions from Bruce where he's now really asserted himself as a main songwriter on equal footing with the rest of the band that he really had not done much before. Let's say the last three Iron Maiden records. This is Iron Maiden without Steve, well said, and without Nico, or Nico, whatever you prefer. And Roy is the secret sauce. He is the special sauce. You may make fun of him, but he is the special sauce on this record.
Fun of his stage name. Everything else is amazing.
And I highly recommend you check out the documentary about Bruce's solo tour with Roy in it when they went to Bosnia-Herzegovina, which I probably just said wrong.
Herzegovina.
Thank you. So just right off the bat, first track of the record, fantastic job. And, you know, what can I say? This is refreshing, everything you expected it to be. And I feel like Bruce also knows what a Bruce record should sound like. It should kind of sound like Maiden, but have its own identity slightly. And I think that this whole record, not just this first song, this whole record makes a good case.
I completely agree. A Bruce Dickinson solo record should sound Iron Maiden-ish. It should be rubbing up against Iron Maiden, you know, just kind of giving that dry hump to Nico McBrain. Because that's the guy that deserves it. He doesn't get it. Moving on into Many Doors of Hell, another great track. And I mean, the thing about Roy Z working with Bruce Dickinson is not just the songwriting, it's not just his playing, but he is able to create the production, the engineering, to make this amazing, ethereal, emotional sound that makes everything Bruce Dickinson does better. I yield.
Yeah, the I love the second song too. It has a little bit of a different sound to it than a lot of the other ones. It seems like it's more like in a major key rather than in a minor key. That may not be the case, but yeah, it's great. It's in I also enjoy the Bruce Dickinson albums are all concept albums and they're high stories. And there's a comic book that's come out with this, which I thought I had bought, but it was really just the preview to it. So now I'm waiting on the full comic book to come out and get the whole story of what's going on with this and everything else. So it's, and he kind of went a little bit in a pop vein with those first two or three solo albums, which wasn't great. But now that he's really leaned into, I'm going to out metal Iron Maiden, even, it's just glorious. So,
It does seem like he's throwing his cards down on the table, not just to Maiden, but just in general. Like, I'm not just Iron Maiden guy. I'm actually very skilled and gifted as a writer. And I do love the story. This is a concept record. It goes along with the concept of the comic books. By the way, with Z2 Comics, almost in every case, it's always a graphic novel first. And I like that this is a serialized monthly comic by Bruce. And I think they're out to number issue 2 now. And then I believe at the end, in a year or a half, or whenever it's all done, it will be collected in a volume. So it's very exciting. Many Doors to Hell kicks ass. Probably my second favorite song on the record, actually, having listened to it quite a few times.
Moving on to Rain on the Graves. And yes, Bruce Dickinson is now showing that he has been a little sidelined in Iron Maiden, but Iron Maiden has Steve Harris. And when you have Steve Harris, who is a lyricist, a musicist, and a singicist, you're going to get sidelined a little bit. And it makes sense for him to do these solo records. And right now we have a record that is building and building, and it is going to just blow up on somebody's face real soon.
Yeah. It's another great track. There isn't a lot of diversity maybe to the songs on this track. Maybe that's not the right word to it. They're all kind of,
no, it's completely the right word. It's a very samey sounding album.
It is, but keep it coming. I don't care. Just keep smashing my face with it over and over again. And I'll
damn take right. Keep it coming right on my face with this record.
My, oh my, Nicholas. Rain on Graves. Rain on Graves. Great song. No notes.
Sorry, we are moving deeply into the, I mean, I'm going to get weirder and weirder as this goes on. See, anyway, moving on into Resurrection Men, side B1. Again, we are building and building, and this is an amazing, and my video is going crazy. I apologize. Let me try this again. All right. This record is a grower, not a shower. I mean, that is the best way to describe this. And another great song. I'm going to show my hand. This song never goes bad. This album never goes bad. It never goes wrong. It always goes straight forward, and it just builds and builds and builds.
Yeah, another good song, keeping with the theme. It seems like the theme is, again, I haven't read the comic yet, but it's something, somebody using some sort of black magic to become immortal, and that's what this is about. I wish I'd read the comic at this point, but I haven't. I don't have too much more to say about it than that, so.
Fair enough. I'm going to say these longer songs don't hold me as well, except the final track. And maybe that's because, again, similar to Maiden, right? Short songs and long songs. Short songs and long songs, no real middle ground. And I feel like this record has that too. And I do feel like I get to the 5-minute mark and I start checking out. So I feel like these longer tracks don't hold me. That could just be me.
No, that is completely true. That is one of the thoughts I had while listening to this, is that Bruce Dickinson is now having the Iron Maiden issue of self-editing, because this is a three-sided record, and frankly, I don't need a three-sided record by anybody not named Robert Plant or King Diamond. Those are the only two exceptions. Moving on into B2, Fingers in the Wounds. This seems like it was meant to be a single. I don't recommend that I would use it as a single. 3 minutes, 38 seconds. It's just the lead up into the next one. And frankly, if we lost this song, the record would still be just as great.
It's a good song, so I hope we don't lose it. So, but yeah, I don't have much more to say on it than that. So
I like this one much more because it's shorter and to the point. But it is an excellent song. Probably, you know, again, in the middle ground. There's no real soft underbelly on this guy, on this album, Nick. But I would say
there's totally not.
I rather like this one.
This song is all like hard overbelly. You got the armor plates all the way through. And in fact, the record is an armor plate. So, you know, that checks out. Moving on into Eternity Has Failed. Man, that reminds me of an Iron Maiden track. Does that remind anybody of an Iron Maiden track?
It does.
I remember. Go ahead.
So the Iron Maiden song was If Eternity Should Fail, which is a great song, which I've heard a million times over. And this not only borrows a title from the Iron Maiden song, lyrically it's very similar also.
And the same music.
And musically, it's basically a sequel to an Iron Maiden song, which is a clever idea. But listening to it, being so familiar with the Iron Maiden song, it was messing with my head, basically, because I kept waiting to hear the next lyric from the Iron Maiden song. And
I loved this song, and it really felt like Bruce came to Steve Harris and went, "Oi, mate, I got an idea. We're going to make a sequel to a song nobody likes." And he's like, "We're not going to do that." And so Bruce is like, "I'll show you when I do my next solo record." And so he did. And I like it, but I don't need it.
You know what else we don't need? Your imitation of a British accent.
That is my imitation of Monty Python.
I know what it is.
All right.
Yeah, I knew the whole backstory. Good song. Good that we shared the backstory. Not as good as the Maiden song. But
that was the real backstory? I was just making shit up.
That is the real backstory. No, I'm saying Danny's backstory, not your backstory. Danny's backstory is correct, and I like the original better than this. But I appreciate that he tried. Here's an idea I had. The band took it in a different direction. Here's my version. No, I don't hate
wait,
it.
Wait,
I,
was I would... that his version of the original song?
It's possible this is the version. It came out the way he wanted it, if he was writing it alone. Uh-huh. You get it?
Very similar to the original. It's similar to the original.
It comes up when I'm listening to the record and I'm like, wait a minute. I know this song already and I shouldn't. But you know what? It's like what's that guy? The guy with the red hair and the V's. He plays a lot of thrash metal. Anybody know that guy? He was in a band. Then he wasn't in that band anymore and he still talks about his old band a lot. Anybody know
the
that guy?
Everybody. Be specific. We're on a time crunch.
Dave Mustaine. It's like him putting out Mechanics as opposed to the Four Horsemen. So I like the balls. May not like the result, but I like the balls. Flipping over to side C, Mistress of Mercy. Again, I'm sorry. This record is very samey at this point, and there are very few things that really pull me out of this like gothic cemetery lull of Bruce Dickinson and Roy Z Metal, which I love being in that cemetery, but every headstone is gray.
Yeah, for whatever reason, I just really love Roy Z's style of guitar. So is good to me because it works. But
real quick, I'm not saying it's bad because it's samey. This is like listening to Dio. Dio is samey, but it's that same that you want. And that's what this is for me.
Right. And I feel like I've always thought with Iron Maiden, more so maybe than any other band, the more you listen to it, the better the songs get. And I haven't listened to this enough to really appreciate or know all the riffs and be waiting for the riffs as they come up. So this is when I can tell it's going to get better with multiple listens. So, and maybe the dynamics will present themselves once I become more familiar with it. So.
Yeah, fair enough. I like Mistress of Mercy better when it was done like 50 times by Moonspell, but it's a good track.
Real quick, you know, we're past normal time. Are there any songs left on this record that anybody feels like they need to mention? If so, say Speak Now or Forever Hold Your Peace.
I am a Virgo and I can't half-ass the track by track. It's all the tracks or none of the tracks.
So all right,
we do them
enough.
All or we don't do them at all right. ever again.
Well, okay, we're halfway in.
How about this? No more two albums on a chaser. A 10 album unboxing from you. So
it was
we can't
seven.
Do all
it
these
was,
things.
It was seven.
Whatever. We can't do them all. Can't do everything.
Okay,
can't
Mistress of Mercy.
I came on too, right? So
yeah. Okay. Moving forward, Face in the Mirror. I see my face. I hate it, and I brush my teeth. Moving on.
Another solid track that continues.
Nobody jumped in and said I was handsome. I was going to throw that out there.
And that's well. Look at us. There's a reason I listen to the audio version of your podcast rather than the YouTube version, right?
Oh, so. Fair.
Slow clap.
But yeah, no, another great song that, you know, continues the story. I feel like, you know, maybe it is true that maybe this it could have been a little bit shorter of an album, but I guess when you're telling a story, sometimes you get an extra song or two in there just because you got story elements you're still trying to get through. So maybe that's where we're at on this album. So
the issue isn't the number of songs. The issue is the length of the songs. Because as we're going on now, the spot we're in, the songs get longer and longer and longer. Side D has one song.
Yeah, no complaints. I think it's, I wouldn't kick anything off the island. I just don't love... I don't think the quality is the same all the way through, but it's a very good album. It's an excellent, it's wonderful in spots. Face in the Mirror is okay. It's not bad. It's shorter. I like that. And Bruce's vocals on here, if there was any doubt after the last world tour and the last album that despite having throat cancer, Bruce cannot deliver. He's one of the best vocalists still to this day in all of rock or metal. His vocals on this whole record are unbelievable, top tier shit. And, you know, Face in the Mirror is probably uplifted by Bruce's performance also.
Completely agree with everything you just said. I'm going to point out that this is, in my humble opinion, and all I have bought is every record since, you know, forever. This is the best Bruce Dickinson vocal record in about 25 years, at least. He really brought it. He brought several deliveries. And we bring in new Shadow of the Gods. Love the title. The songs are getting longer. None of the songs, and I'm going to echo Keefe. I wouldn't kick anybody off the island. I would, however, if you look at some of these songs, because I listened to this on YouTube on the way home before I got home, I listened to disc two. A lot of these songs have like 30 seconds, 45 seconds of really, really quiet to the song, and okay, we don't need a 45 second fade in. That is just it's wasteful. Save the tape, save the rainforest. It's the same thing.
Yeah, this is, you said it's a 7 minute song. I'm not a fan of long intros in songs either, because when you're ready to rock, then you got to sit through a...
The long intro is fine. What I don't need is like the negative 6 decibel intro that over the course of the next 17 minutes moves up to 25. And that's what we have on this record. So if you just, you know, get rid of that stupid bullshit, that like pretentious crap, we shave 5 minutes off this record already. And I just feel like if you look at my face, I can shave today because I haven't shaved in 2 weeks. So I've got a stubble, and there's a lot of stubble here that we could have shaved off. That's all I'm going to say.
Yeah. I kind of feel the same way. It's like the first time through you enjoy all that stuff, but after that, you don't really need all that, but yeah, this is another great song with a ton of great Roy Z galloping riffs, which, I love his production on all the Bruce albums too. Whatever he's doing with that low end and the bass guitar, it's just glorious. It just got the exact amount of rumble while still maintaining clarity. I don't know if that makes any sense, but
perfect sense.
Yeah, the mix is so great. I guess he does the mixing too. I don't know, but yeah,
he does the everything.
I think, yeah, Roy gets his flowers here. Great job on the record. I think this is a good song. I would have trimmed it a little, trimmed the hedges a little on the intro, but it's not a bad song. It's a very good song.
Okay, Nick, don't make that joke. Don't make the joke. Don't make the joke. There's a joke in my head, and I can't make it
any worse than the 15 you've made already, right?
No, it can be.
Glacially Musical Podcast is not sponsored by Manscaped, but maybe it will be someday.
I was thinking Ladyscape jokes, but moving on into side D, manscaping doesn't have like names for the style, so it doesn't work.
It's a brand of
I know what it is, but it doesn't. They don't have names for the style, so it doesn't. The joke doesn't work. Anywho, moving on into track one of side D, the last track of the record, Sonata Immortal Beloved. I'm just going to point out that Roy Z is the absolute wonderful yin to Bruce Dickinson's yang, and he is able to bring Bruce Dickinson out in a way that we did not get before him. Love this record, and I love the predecessor, Tyranny of Souls. If Bruce Dickinson had never rejoined Iron Maiden, these records would have been enough for me. I yield my time.
Yeah, to reiterate, like, honestly, I think that I like some of the Bruce Dickinson solo records better than the Iron Maiden records.
There are instances where I would definitely agree with
like
that.
Like the last four with Roy Z. Not that I don't love the Iron Maiden records, even the new progressive stuff. I've loved the last few records also. But Iron Maiden's really gotten very progressive. And I think maybe this is a little bit less of that. You know, but so I think it's a little bit heavier than Iron Maiden in a lot of ways. And so to sum it up, I'm glad we have both. I'm glad we get Iron Maiden and I'm glad we get Bruce Dickinson solo, because there's a space in my stereo for both. So
nicely said. I also agree. I think I'm glad that this exists. I'm glad this record exists. It sounds like this has energized him again. And he's saying it's not going to be 16, 17 years till there's another record. And obviously Maiden has a full-on schedule the next few years, and these guys are not getting any younger. And they, again, we just had some health scares in the band. But I like this final track. This is the ending track being lengthy. I don't mind. And I do like to say Iron Maiden is progressive for them. I don't consider them truly progressive metal as much as they think they are, but it's surely more progressive than they were. And they're not trying to I appreciate that Iron Maiden at this age is trying to improve and take chances and be creative, and Bruce also. So I think this is just, you know, this is fine, and is a great album overall. It's a great listening experience. I probably will go back to it again a few more times while it's fresh. But I still want Maiden, and I still want Bruce and Maiden. And I think I'm probably looking forward more to another Bruce solo album than the next Maiden record. But that, I thought Senjutsu was very good and great in places, but not great complete. That's just me.
Senjutsu had a lot of this feels like, oh, we're trying to do Power Slave. Oh, we're trying to do Brave New World. Oh, we're trying to do Dance of Death. And this record feels like it's trying to do this record. That's the biggest difference, I think, between this one and Senjutsu. And it's a little bit, briefer, which is good, because Senjutsu was a bit overblown, just like Book of Souls was overblown, just like Final Frontier was overblown, just like A Matter of Life and Death was overblown. I mean, I don't know if anybody's noticed a pattern there, but this one, I feel like, got a little more overblown than it needed to be. But you know what? Bruce Dickinson is 875, and he has given me 758,000 hours of amazing metal and amazing great time. So I will allow this, and I will say this is a great record. I'm going to give it an 8.5 out of 10. And Danny, give your rating, and then I'm going to let Keefe take us out, and I'm muting and shutting up.
I give it a 9 out of 10, and with the possibility that that number will improve on further listens.
That is a very good score. I think, to me, I don't do half marks. So I think this is an 8 or a 9. It might become a 9 for me later, but I think it's definitely at least an 8. I don't do the halves. And you know, again, I'm glad to have this record. It has been already a stellar year of metal releases, and this has been one of the best ones. And will hopefully erase the stain of Ace Frehley and Mick Mars on my soul.
The taint.
I didn't hate me. The taint stain. Mick Mars one.
It's not good.
I didn't hate it. It was, in some ways, it was better than what I thought it would be, because I thought it would be like a blues album, and it's metal.
I wish it was a blues album. It would have been better. It's certainly way better than anything Motley Crue is going to do, like, for sure. Like, they won't even come near it, and it's not that good. So, like,
Motley Crue is not going to do anything.
Yeah, they are. They have an EP written with
no,
John.
No, they don't. They might have it written. No.
They recorded it.
I don't believe that. Until it is pressed, I know. They are saying they're doing that because Mick is doing albums. No, they're just going to go out, and Vince Neil is going to barely not fall over. And to the tracks, because lip syncing the tracks has now gotten difficult for him. And John 5 is going to go out and be amazing. And then everybody else is just going to be so fucking terrible. I'm going to stop.
You're not, but it's okay.
Just the one thing
I'm stopping for a second.
With the Mick Mars album, it felt kind of overproduced. There was too much going on with the vocals. It sounded kind of like Five Finger Death Punch.
Overproduced? Are we talking about the Ace Frehley record?
Well, but that was
kind of
pop rock. So that was kind of supposed to be. But I was hoping for,
you know, because Mick Mars, right? We're not expecting Mick Mars of Motley Crue to make pop rock. That's the last thing we're going to think of. That's definitely not the same old situation. That is definitely not Girls, Girls, Girls. And you know what? Home Sweet Home, I wouldn't call that poppy at all.
Oh, I love those songs, though.
I love all those songs. Those songs are amazing.
Which, you know, the crazy thing is that the singer for the singer on the Mick Mars albums, James Button, I've met him before, and I met him in Peoria, Illinois.
It doesn't play in Peoria.
He, James Button, the singer, definitely did, because that's where I saw him play with Steven Adler. He was the singer for Steven Adler.
Oh, band. My God. Okay, we don't have Steven Adler story time, and YouTube will hate those stories because I've heard them in your car that you told to a minister. I'm just going to – you said that to him.
Oh, well,
nope,
yeah.
Nope,
yeah.
Don't, Danny. Don't, Danny.
I wasn't involved in that story, but we saw Steven Adler play in Peoria. There's like maybe 20 people there, and James Button was his singer.
We will get – we'll get to that next time. We're going to now let Keefe take us home.
In the spirit of Reservoir Dogs, I got this guy over here not tipping and Madonna's big dick in my other ear. Danny, it's a pleasure to have you back, sir. Please come back again sometime. Nick will behave himself next time. I'm sure he won't, but I'm going to promise that he will. And I appreciate you so much. We will link all your stuff in the description because it's too numerous to name, including the St. Baldrick's charity show you have coming up next month, a month from today, I believe, as we record this, a month from this weekend, as you listen out there. And you have been listening to the Glacially Musical Podcast. I am Keefe of GhostCultMag.com. You'll follow me on all the things in the description. Glacially Musical was a regular blog by your host, Nick Cameron. It is now this thing, whatever this is, on YouTube and all the podcast things. Please like and subscribe and give us – if you manage to somehow make it to the end of this thing, you are a champion, a gentleman or a gentlewoman or a gentle them, and a scholar. So thank you so much. And as we say every week at the Glacially Musical Podcast, it does not play in Peoria, but Bruce Dickinson definitely did a book signing and a discussion there not too long ago.
What the fudge?
Exactly.